no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama from the Golden Age. We'll begin our hour this week with Results Incorporated and their story from December 16, 1944, titled The Last of the Bloody Gillettes. After that, it's the Philip Morris Playhouse and The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, their episode from August 19, 1953.
Presenting Lloyd Nolan as Johnny Strange and Claire Trevor as Terry Travis in another adventure of Results Incorporated. Sooner or later, every man must learn this sad fact. Come storm, come flood, come fire, come bill collectors. A woman will make that trip to the beauty parlor. At this moment, Teresa Travis, blonde secretary of Results Incorporated, is receiving the expert attention of Monsieur Jean Gillette, hairstylist extraordinary. Terry watches his progress in the mirror.
No, Jean.
Eh?
I want my hair higher, more upsweep.
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry. More like this?
No, that's not it either. Oh, Jean, you know what I like. Use your imagination.
Today I do not feel creative. A woman's hair does not move me.
Why, Jean, I thought you lived for your art.
Well, art is all right, but now I have the chance to make $2,500, and I can't do anything about it.
Well, that's a pretty expensive count. What's wrong?
I promise you won't tell any of the ladies, Miss Travis?
Yes, I promise.
Well, you see, I got a letter this morning from Lear magazine. They said they would pay me $2,500 for an interview and pictures of my old home.
Why, Jean, I didn't know you were famous.
Oh, I'm not Miss Travis, but my family is notorious. Maybe you have heard of the Bloody Gillettes?
The Bloody Gillettes. Oh, the Gillettes and the Corbett. The old feuding families in the Black Swamp. Yes, I read about it in the newspapers.
That is right. You see, Monsieur Jean Gillette, your hairdresser, is really, without the phony French accent, Jean Gillette, last of the Bloody Gillettes.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Oh, dear.
Oh, but why all this sudden interest from the magazine?
Well, you see, they've heard that the last man of the Cobber family just died.
Yes.
So they want to run an article on the end of the Gillette-Cobber feud.
I see. Complete with an interview and your picture.
Yes. Oh, but look at me, Miss Travis. I'm a meek little guy. I'm only 5'2" tall. Why, it takes 5 different vitamins just to get me out of bed in the morning, and then 3 more to support my mustache. Oh, I know I don't look like a bloody Gillette. I look more like a floorwalker in the infant's wear department.
Oh, dear. About as bloodthirsty as a catnip mouse.
Yes.
But for $2,500...
No, Miss Travis, I can't let them publish a picture of me. Why, every Gillette would turn over in his grave, clear back to great-grandfather Zedekiah. Why, if the magazine people saw me, they...
I just wonder. You know, maybe this is a case for Results Incorporated.
You mean maybe you could help me somehow?
Yes. If there's one hole in the fence, Johnny Strange will find it. And if there isn't, he'll make one.
Oh, dear. Well, I'd certainly like to get that $2,500. Now, if I could keep the family reputation,
Oh, you could keep the reputation, but maybe not the whole $2,500. We charge a fee, you know.
Oh, well, I'd be glad to pay that.
Well, then what are we waiting for? Get your hat. Come on.
Get this straight, Terry. I'm to go down to this Black Swamp place, pose as Jean Gillette, the last of the Bloody Gillettes, give an interview to the magazine, and have my picture taken.
Yep, that's the deal.
And I'll go along as your chauffeur, Mr. Mm-hmm. Strange. You see, that way I can coach you in everything you will need to know.
Terry McGill, I'm afraid you stayed under that hairdryer just a wee bit too long. The brains, you know.
Oh, now, Johnny, I know what you're thinking. Somebody might say that you don't look like Gene Gillette. But that's all fixed. He hasn't been in Corbisville since he was a boy.
Oh, no. My mother was afraid I'd get killed, so she brought me to the city before I could get dragged into the feud.
Well, I suppose I could put on a rough, tough act.
You'll do it, Mr. Strange?
Why, of course he will.
Oh, that's wonderful. Then I'll telegraph to Berta Ross that we'll be in Corbisville tomorrow afternoon.
Well, who is Berta Ross?
She's the writer for Lear Magazine. They told me she's down there right now collecting material for the story.
I suppose I better take along walking shoes and, let's see, a couple of old dresses.
Hold it, sugar, hold it. This party is going to be strictly stag.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Strange. My contract with Results says 25% of the profits and 50% of the fun.
But you can't go, Miss Travis. You see, I haven't got a wife.
Oh, you're going to have one, Mr. Gillette. Or rather, Johnny is. You all know them bloody Gillettes. Why, they got a heap of yearning for the women folks. Well, I'll never believe another road sign. 2 more miles to Corbisville.
Oh, it was right, Miss Travis. We're in Corbisville right now.
In it? Well, where is it?
Well, actually, there isn't any town. It's just that general store right ahead of us.
Oh, Hey, pipe the sign over the front porch.
Billy Gundle's store. Staples, hardware, post office, seed, kerosene, justice of the peace, tobacco, and embalming.
The local feed and feud store. Say, I wonder if Billy's store includes one Miss Berta Ross.
Well, maybe that old man sitting on the porch would know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, mister, hi there.
Hey, talking to me, young fella.
Yeah, you know where we can find a lady name of Berta Ross?
At a scribbling woman.
That's right.
She's inside.
Hello there, you're late.
Good-looking redhead.
Darling, don't forget you've got a wife.
Gosh, I hope we can get away with this act. It'd be dreadful if something went wrong.
I was beginning to think you weren't coming down to this dreary, bleary hole. You, Gene Gillette?
Hmm? Yeah. And this is the wife, and Jones, our chauffeur.
How do you chauffeur? Well, the Gillettes have come up in the world. Glad to meet you. I've got a guy with a flatboat waiting to take us across the swamp to your ancestral shack.
Good. We're ready whenever you are.
I put in a phone call, and I better check and see if it's come through. Do you know if my call's come through all right?
Oh, Miss Ross, Miss Ross, I got your telephone. Yes, it's come through.
Okay. If you'll excuse me a minute, I'll see about it.
Certainly. Take your time.
We'll go down to the boat as soon as I'm through.
Hey, reckon this is the first time we done got a telephone clean to New York.
And it's the last time if it depends on Berta Ross.
It is just all right, boss, young woman. Oh, the phone's right over there.
Hello? Ed? Yeah, Berta. Yes, he arrived. With a wife, darn it. But listen, Ed, we got a bump steer on the story. Old Chuck Colby, the last of the clan, didn't drown. He's still alive. Of course I'm sure. Listen, I hired old Colby to take Gene Gillette out to the swamp place. Oh, sure, there's going to be trouble. Not that kind. Don't worry. I won't tip them off. I'm going to get a story one way or another.
Is that our flatboat, the one with the old guy and the dog in it?
That's right. He's waiting for us. He looks like Rip Van Winkle, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Beard, slouch hat, chawl in the backy and everything.
He looks sort of fierce to me. He has a mad gleam in his eye.
I hope nothing slips up. Meddling in somebody else's feud is sort of dangerous business.
What feud? All the Corbis are dead. You've got nothing to worry about. All right, Chuck. Ready to go.
Get in.
All right, you first, Harry.
All right. You know, if nobody objects, I think I'll sit up here in front.
That's it. Hey, watch it, Jones. Don't fall overboard.
It's an awfully small boat, isn't it? And so low in the water. Must we have that dog in the boat, too?
Where I go, Daniel goes.
All right, Chuck, let's go. The Gillette place. Darling, look. He's going to push the boat with a pole, just like a gondolier in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
Golly, it's dark in this swamp.
Yeah, it is.
Which you fellas is Gillette?
Guilty, Your Honor.
What's that?
I am. I'm Galette.
Remember you when you was a young'un?
Is that right?
Before your ma took you off.
Yeah, that's all.
Mr. Galette, I've been checking up around here on this so-called feud. Frankly, I think the Galette-Culber families took it out in tall talk.
Oh, no, no. Oh, that is... I mean,
well, it depends on what you call tall talk, Miss Ross. You see, Grandpappy Zeke talked seven Culbers into rather permanent silence.
Seven?
Well, eight. That is, if you want to count the guy that Grandpappy made eat mud and then swallow a planting of cactus seeds.
Yes, you see, every Galette had to kill three Culbers to earn his silver wings.
Yes, but I understand that the Culbers ran up a higher box score than the Galette.
Oh, gracious, I wonder what's wrong with our boatman. He acts as though he's strangling.
Maybe he swallowed his tobacco the wrong way.
Mm. As I started to say, maybe the old-timers were bloodthirsty enough, but, well, I must say, Mr. Galette, you look thoroughly civilized and...
Well, my husband is just not polished, but underneath...
I bet he wouldn't kill a Culber if he saw one. What would you do, Mr. Galette?
What would I do? Say, I just wish I could meet up with one. I'd take a cross-cut saw to him. I'd cut him up in a stove length. I'd splinter him into... Hey,
heavens, that dog.
He sounds like a lost soul.
Shut up, Daniel. Daniel's best corpse held in these here swamps. Don't howl that away without there's a corpse around.
Corpse?
Or somebody gonna be.
Oh, well, can't we find something nicer to talk about?
There you are, children. The Galette homestead. Dead ahead.
Well, it's completely surrounded by swamps.
Yeah, the man's in the mush. You can hardly see it for the trees and hanging moss.
Get ready to jump. I'm going to hit the landing.
Okay, Terry, jump.
I made it.
Here, let me give you a hand, Miss Ross.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's good to be on solid ground again.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Johnny, the boatman, he's pushing off.
Hey, don't leave us here.
You're going home for my Galette gun.
You're good. What's that?
Can't kill a Galette except with my feuding gun.
His feuding gun? Hey, say, what's your name?
Culber. Old Chuck Culber.
Culber. What? Then he's...
Oh, Johnny.
Back to Johnny Strange and Terry Travis in just a moment, but first, a message from your government. Accidents are on the increase. More people are being killed and injured through carelessness than as casualties of war. In traffic, at home, at work, on the farm, needless death and injury take place every day. And the fact is, most accidents need never have occurred. There are accidents right now going somewhere to happen, and they can be prevented. They won't happen if you observe the ABCs of safety. Always be careful. In 1943, most types of accidents increased over the previous year. Traffic deaths were lower due to wartime restrictions, but they increased 10% in the first half of 1944. Many industries, large and small, have reduced their accident rate from 50 to 90% through safety engineering, education, and other measures. At work, people are learning the importance of always being on guard. This vigilance must reach every plant and office, and in traffic, at home, and on the farm, more precautionary measures must be taken. Taken now and continued to keep the accident toll from mounting. To reduce this toll and to save lives by preventing the unnecessary, you're needed on the job today. For your own protection, remember always the ABCs of precaution. Always be careful. And now, back to Results Incorporated, starring Claire Trevor and Lloyd Nolan. In their youth and innocence, Johnny and Terry have blundered into a deadly feud in the Black Swamps. Right now, Johnny is staring down the barrel of a mean-looking squirrel gun.
Look, Mr. Culber, you got me all wrong. I'm not a Galette. I'm Johnny Strange. That's
you,
my name.
You, Galette, always was fishy tongue when it come to dying.
Johnny, show him your driver's license.
Yeah. Here, now, you can read it for yourself. Here.
Very interesting.
Well, now you believe me, huh?
Can't read.
Oh, I can't read it. Oh, okay, Miss Ross, you read it to him. Here.
All right. Uh-huh. It says Johnny Strange, all right, but that doesn't mean anything.
You just sneaked back to the Black Swamps with another guy's papers.
Oh, for the love
of... Mr. Jones, you can identify Johnny. Well, can't you, Mr. Jones?
Well, oh, golly.
Hey, that was my hat.
I saw you edging away, Mr. Gillespie. You stay right here.
Well, that was a real bullet.
Why'd you dangle? Let's come back here anyway. I ain't had to kill one of your breed in 20 years. Was figuring to spend a peaceful old age.
Well, you can keep it peaceful as far as I'm concerned.
No, I can't. You're a collecting. I gotta kill you. Darn it all. It's your fault, Miss Ross. Poking your nose in other folks' feuding.
Surely you're not serious. Johnny or Gene or whatever his name is might be telling the truth. You wouldn't want to kill the wrong man, Mr. Carver.
Of course I don't. What you'll take me for, a murderer?
Well, if you'll let us go back to the mainland, you can get on the telephone and talk to Johnny's friends. They'll tell you who he is.
No, sirree. That's just another galette trick.
Well, then send somebody back and let them find out for you. I'll go, or Miss Ross here.
I don't know. Swamp ain't fit for a woman. Maybe I might let this little person here go.
Who, me?
You.
Oh, but... Well, the swamp, I wouldn't know what to, how to...
What?
Well, if you say so.
All right. You just go to Bill Gundle's store and have him telephone and find out who this fella is. Then you bring Billy out here so as I can know for sure. Billy's a friend of mine.
Yes, sir.
And if you try and fetch help, I'll carve out your gizzard and feed it to my dog. You hear?
Your dog?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, look, would you let us talk to Jones and tell him who to telephone?
Go ahead. Talking won't hurt.
Oh, fine. Now, write down this telephone number, Jones. Listen, call the sheriff.
The sheriff, the militia, the army, anybody.
I'm going to. I'll get you out somehow. You saved me.
Stop and get gathering. Get going.
Yes, sir.
My boat's tied up at the landing. Don't you go steering it into no mud flat.
I hope not. Oh, it's almost dark. I won't be able to find my way.
Go on before I shoot your heels off.
I'm going.
That's better. Now you three, get upstairs and get to bed.
Hmm? What?
But Jones will be back in a couple of hours.
It's only 6:30.
I've been going to bed at 6:30 for 70 years, and I ain't stopping now. Get it on.
Oh, no, but listen.
Curse you, cross that. I said get to bed.
All right.
You too, young woman. I'm herding all of you. Get upstairs.
I'm going.
And don't you figure on trying no tricks like jumping out the window. It's all bog and quicksand on that side of the house.
Well, thanks for the information.
All right, now. You two galettes, take this here bedroom and redhead the one down the hall.
Just a minute. We can't do that.
Huh? Why not?
We're not married.
No.
Well, cuss. What kind of talk is it?
They're not galettes. Now they're not even married. I hope that's double talk.
That's galettes all over. Why don't I just shoot him now?
No. Listen, you don't understand.
I understand enough. Getting there before I forget myself.
Come on, Johnny.
Well, of all the unreasonable cusses.
Johnny, what are we going to do?
We're going to get out of here somehow, some way.
Oh, no. Let's wait for the sheriff.
No. I'm not going on Mr. Corber's promises. He's just trigger happy. I want to look out this window. Yep. The old guy's right, all right. Bob. Maybe quicksand.
Well, then there's no way out.
Now, listen. I'm going to sneak out in the hall and explore the second floor. Maybe I can find a back stairway or something. If we can just get out of here, we might be able to find a boat.
Oh, Johnny,
you know, and...
please be careful. Now, if he should catch you...
No, don't worry. I'm just going to stick my head out first, and I'll open the door softly.
Do you see him?
No. It's okay. Wish me luck.
Oh. Where was he, Johnny?
He was hiding at the top of the stairs, the old buzzard.
Well... looks like we're going to spend the evening in the bedroom.
Yeah. You were so wild-eyed to fix Mr. Gillette up with a wife.
Now what?
No, nothing.
Well, that's what I thought. Oh, excuse me, Johnny. Oh, I'm so tired from all this excitement.
Yeah, don't blame you. Hey, where are you going?
Well, I thought I'd lie down for a while.
No, Terry, stop it.
But I'm tired, Johnny. I'll
Just take my shoes off. Stretch out.
I'm going to get out of here. Rifle or no rifle, I'm going to switch bedrooms with Bertha.
I've heard a lot of stories about the bloody Galettes, but I never...
Shh, please, listen. I want you to go in the other...
I thought so! With another woman.
No, no, you got this wrong now.
I reckon not. Ain't no question now you're a Galette. Come on, get... You two young women, throw that blanket around you.
You don't have to wave that gun in my face.
Come on, get down the hall. You're going this here main bedroom. All of you.
Johnny, what happened?
Yeah. Oh. Tagged again.
Now, stay in there, all three of you. I'm going to spend the night right outside this here door with my gun.
Well, it suits me. Two's company and three's propriety.
And if and that little Possum Jones don't get back here pretty quick, I'm going to shoot you anyway.
Oh, that Possum Jones is liable to shoot you, Grandpappy. He's the real Johnny Galette.
No, I'll tell you.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter now, Johnny. He's gone. He'll bring back the sheriff.
And... that little war-teen Galette. I sure admire you joking, ma'am.
I'm not joking. It's true.
Forget it, ma'am. It ain't going to work. Come the first crack of dawn, I'm going to get you, Mr. Galette. That's the promise of old Chuck Corber.
The old goof is sleeping sound.
Yeah, that's a sleeping sound, all right. Now, if we can just creep past him without waking him up, maybe we can get downstairs.
Be careful.
No, it's getting light enough for us to find a...
Who started that pooch off?
Come on, make it snappy, Terry. Chuck, stirring. Duck!
Cut your first eye, Ingress. You make one step more to be plumb into prediction. Get away from those stairs!
Oh, what was that shooting?
Oh, just ye old feudie shop opening up for the day, Miss Ross.
There wasn't any reason to fire at us, Mr. Corbett.
No.
We were just stretching our legs.
Never seen any better fitter for it than yourn, Miss Galette. Young widow women like you won't have no trouble getting yourself a new man. Hear that? Old Daniel said it's time for a corpsing. Come on, Galette. I sure hate to do this. There ain't no use waiting when you got a chore to do.
Oh, please, Mr. Corber. It isn't sunrise yet.
And no sense quibbling over a few measly minutes. Where you prefer to get it, Galette?
Oh, no, look, you're really going too far, asking me to call my own shot.
All right. Here it comes, Galette.
No, wait. Somebody's coming.
Johnny, get
up. Oh, Jonesy, good old Jonesy. Oh,
hello. Oh, I hope I didn't disturb anybody.
You cuss me, bow-legged, if it ain't that little possum back again.
Jonesy, where's the sheriff?
I didn't bring him.
Huh?
You didn't bring...
I didn't get to town. It was so dark and there were so many awful noises and I got scared and I got lost.
Oh, so that's what you two were planning, eh?
Oh, we sent the raven to find land and he lands back here.
Well, the light in the Galette house was the only one I could see anywhere. It was so dark and something kept saying, woo, woo, right in my ear.
Yes, well, that Galette gun is about to make a different sound in my ear.
Well, that settles it. This posse ain't no Galette.
Jonesy, tell him the truth.
Well, I...
Well, nobody can tell me any Galette will lose his way in the swamp. Why, the whole seed and breed of them was spawned here.
Now, just a minute, Corbett. You've known all the Galettes. Now, do I look like a Galette?
I can't say as you do. But you sounded like one the way you was bragging in the boat.
Oh, well, I was just doing that to give this Ross girl here something to write about.
Looks as if you're stuck with your story.
Mm. Yeah, quit your caterwauling, all of you. I ain't going to wait no longer. Be late getting back to my cabin for my breakfast, where it is.
Too bad about you and your breakfast.
Well, I've ate my grits half an hour after sunup for 70 years. And ain't gonna let no Galette stop me now.
Oh, well, say, why don't you start pulling us back in your flat-bottom yacht, and then you can just drop us overboard, you know, when you're ready.
Yes, that'd save time.
Yeah, no grave digging required.
No fuss, no bother.
Catch me upside down. It's a smart idea. I'll do it. Go on.
Get moving down to the boat. All of you. Come on.
Oh, dear. I think it's a terrible idea, Miss Ross. If Corbin doesn't murder us with his bullets, he'll drown us in that awful swamp.
Tough either way, little man. Especially for the one of you that isn't Galette.
Sheriff Daniel, you're no more impatient than I be. Get in the boat, all of you.
Terry.
Whatever made you suggest this taking for us to ride, Johnny?
Look, when we get in the boat, you start a hair pulling match with Berta.
Oh.
Step along there, you. Don't do so much talking. And you, Possum?
Me?
Yes, you take the pole.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Corber.
Yes?
How about letting me take a hand with a pole, you know?
No, you don't.
No?
You sit right there in the back pew where I can keep my Galette pointed at you. And don't rock the boat. Already in water over 10 feet deep, and I can't swim.
Oh, you... well, that's too bad. Oh, Terry.
Roger.
Move over, you.
Huh? Who are you talking to?
You, Berta Ross. Stop crowding me.
Why, you snippet. Don't shove me.
I'll show you.
Hey, what's going on here?
Sick of Terry. Give me the old Galette one, too.
Hey, when did that get record?
Oh, God, Terry.
Move my hair, will you? I'll show you.
You snippet.
It's over.
Hey, Terry. Where are you?
Here, Johnny.
Just swim back to the landing.
All right.
I'll get Corbett.
I can't swim, can I, Lord?
All right, then. Let go of your rifle.
I dropped her. Quit shoving my head up.
Well, I think I'll dunk you once more, just for luck. Come on.
Help, I can't swim.
Take it easy, Jonesy. I've got you.
Terry, you okay?
Yep. Bottom.
Well, so is Corba. Wait till I dredge him up. Come on.
Where's Berta?
Here I am. Oh, I don't see how there's any water left for you to swim in after what I swallowed.
Oh, are you all right?
I guess so.
Oh, why don't you let a fella in on your little schemes?
Oh, sorry. I had to work fast.
I don't know how I can thank you for saving my life, Miss Travis.
Oh, but I didn't save your life, Jonesy.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, no, I didn't. You saved Corber. Didn't he, Johnny?
What?
Yes, right you are, Terry. That's just what he did. Here, Jonesy, grab hold of Corbett. Quick, before he comes to.
Gotta kill me, Galette. I gotta...
Oh, no, no. Not now you can't, Corbett.
What's that? What's that?
Why, you can't kill a man who's just saved your life, can you? Go on, Jonesy. Tell him how you saved him from drowning.
That little possum?
That little possum is the last of the bloody Galettes, whether you believe it or not.
Is that the unpunished truth?
I'm afraid it is. I'm the real Jean Galette.
And you drug me up from the bottom of this here swamp?
Well, he still had a hold of your collar when he came to, didn't he?
Curse me, crook-necked. I reckon there's nothing else to do. Put it there, Galette.
Well,
Johnny, I think we're entitled to a little congratulations ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Put it there, partner.
As one life saver to another, I certainly will.
All right, you two, break it up. I got to get to a phone with a story.
Oh, Miss Ross, will I still get the $2,500?
You certainly will, or your name isn't Jean Galette.
Now, let's not go through that again.
No.
Here's Berta's article, Johnny.
Yeah, How I Helped to End the Corber-Galette Feud by Berta Ross.
Listen to this. I found Johnny Galette, the last of the bloody Galettes, to be a baby-faced feudist whose innocent appearance seems merely to mask an iron nerve. By sheer stark courage, he managed to outwit and outfight wily old Chuck Corber, a deadly killer who has laid to rest more than his allotment of Gillette.
Well, don't you love that? No mention of Results Incorporated.
No. Oh, you wouldn't know that we had ever even been near the Black Swamp to hear her story.
After my flawless performance as a backwards boy.
You know, I noticed you weren't a bit backward about wandering into Berta's room after she'd gone to bed that night.
No. Just let's leave sleeping ducks lie.
Yeah, I never will be sure what would have happened if old Corba hadn't been around.
Now, that, sugar, is another bedtime story. Just remind me to tell it to you sometime, huh?
Tune in again next week at the same time for another half hour of thrill, suspense, and laughs with Results Incorporated, starring Lloyd Nolan and Claire Trevor. You'll enjoy listening to this new comedy mystery program, so make a date, won't you, this same time next week. Lloyd Nolan appears through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox Studios. Tonight's script was written by Leonard St. Clair and Stuart Sterling, based on characters created by Lawrence Edmund Taylor. Music was by Russ Crump. This program originated in the Donnelly Studios in Hollywood. Bob O'Connor speaking. This is Mutual.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Philip Morris Playhouse on Broadway. Producer-director of the Philip Morris Playhouse on Broadway, Charles Martin.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse on Broadway offers the world-famous star, Mr. Peter Lorre, in the gripping fantasy, The Night Has a Thousand Eyes. Support Sloan, Jewel Lane, Ed Begley, and Mandel Kramer. Now, while our curtain is ringing up, ladies and gentlemen, I should like to suggest that you light up and relax with the Philip Morris, truly America's finest cigarette. You'll doubly enjoy our show. And now, as the house lights darken, the curtain is going up on The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, starring Mr. Peter Lorre.
This story begins in a railroad yard in San Francisco. The night was eerie, strange, weird. No moon was in the sky, and I was looking for a girl. I knew she was going to do something drastic, violent, terrible. As I walked along the empty tracks, I wondered if I was too late. Suddenly, as I approached a dim light, I looked down and saw her purse, her gloves, her lipstick, and other things all spilled out as though thrown away in haste. A sickening feeling came over me. Was I too late? If I'd only gotten there a minute sooner, where was she? I looked frantically for her. As I heard the screech of the approaching train far off, I started desperately to search. I spotted a tower with a winding stairway. A light was overhead, and suddenly there she was, way up on top, poised, ready to leap in front of the path of the approaching train. Frantically, I raced up the front-bound stairway, faster and faster, with every ounce of strength inside me. I made it just in time. It's all right, Jean.
Why did you stop me?
It's all right. Everything is all right.
No, it isn't. I can't face life anymore. It's too late.
It's never too late. Never. And I'll never let you go.
How did you know where I was?
Well, for one thing, your car.
But I didn't tell anybody where I was going.
I'll tell you about it later. First, let's have some coffee. When did you eat last?
Breakfast, I think.
Come on. Who made you do this?
No one.
Who told you that you were going to die?
What difference does it make?
Was it Mr. Triton?
Yes.
I know where he hangs out. That's where we'll have coffee. Come on. I took her to a little out-of-the-way place in the slum section of San Francisco. And as we opened the door, I saw Triton sitting at a table in the corner. He looked like a dead man. With a curious, twisted smile on his face. We went right over. Mr. Triton stood up politely, then talked.
Oh, hello, Jean. I've ordered coffee for you.
Mr. Triton, how did you know I'd be here?
Oh, I knew. Hello, Elliot. Won't you sit down?
I think you have quite a bit of explaining to do, Mr. Triton.
To whom?
To the police.
If you like.
Elliot, why should you go to the police?
I know a confidence racket when I see one.
Mr. Triton's been trying to help me.
By scaring you into suicide?
Look, I don't blame you for being suspicious, Elliot, but I have no desire to hurt Jean.
Then what have you been doing to her?
I merely told her what I saw.
He told me I was to die soon, at night, under the stars.
And you believe that, Jean?
Yes.
Look, Elliot... You're a scientist. You're a geologist. Would you be willing to listen to my story with a mind of a scientist, provided I'm free to go to the police afterwards?
There are no strings attached. All right. I'm listening.
Oh, it was 20 years ago when he first began. I was doing a mind reading act in a vaudeville show. I was billed as Triton, the mental wizard. I had two assistants, a lady named Jenny and a man named Harry Cortland. Cortland played the piano. Jenny went into the audience with slips of paper for their questions.
The next question, Triton, is from a lady. Can you tell me her name?
Yes, her name is Mary Gilkin. She lives at 123 Poe Avenue. Am I right?
What is the question she is asking, Triton?
The question she's asking is, will my mother-in-law go home soon? Well, madame, I rarely meddle in domestic affairs, but I believe I can safely say that she will leave very soon.
Now, there's a gentleman in the audience, Triton.
Just a moment, Jenny. I'm receiving a very disrupting thought connected with Mrs. Gilkin.
Mrs. Gilkin?
Yes, that's right. I don't understand it. Mrs. Gilkin. Miss Gilkin, go home immediately at once. Your little boy's in trouble, in danger. Go home at once. Lady in the audience rushed home in a panic. She got there just in time. Her little boy had found some matches. The room was on fire. He was pretty badly burned, but his life was saved. It was then that I realized that somehow, somewhere, I had been given a mysterious gift, an inner eye, so that I could pierce the veils of tomorrow. When I left in a theater that night, a newsboy came up to sell me a paper, and as I handed him the money, I looked into his eyes and I saw death sitting there. Next day, I heard he had been run down by a truck. How do you explain that, Elliot?
Good guesses, that's
good
all.
Good guesses, huh? Let me tell you something that you didn't know. Jenny, the girl who assisted me in my act, was this girl's mother.
Jean?
Yes, Elliot. And Mr. Cortland, who played the piano for Mr. Triton, was my father.
Yes. Cortland and I were both in love with Jenny. Well, let me tell you what happened. One night, as Jenny was in the audience, the vision came again. And only this time, it was a vision about Jenny.
Can you tell me his name?
Yes, his name is,
I said, can you tell me his name, Triton?
His name is, No, I can't stand it. It can't be. I don't believe it. Ring down a curtain.
What's the matter?
Ring down a curtain, I said. Ring down a curtain. I can't go on anymore. Down a curtain and Jenny rushed into my dressing room in a great state of frenzy.
What was the matter, Triton?
I don't know. I suddenly felt sick. I'll explain it to the manager.
You looked at me so strangely on stage. You had another one of those visions.
Huh? No.
You did. I know it.
No.
I can always tell.
Jenny, I love you, Jenny.
Then why don't we get married?
Because I can't marry you, Jenny.
Why not?
I did have a vision. I saw us married, and I saw you in childbirth, and a child lived.
And I died?
Yes, you died.
Oh, silly.
That's why I can't marry you. I won't let it happen, and I'm never going on stage again.
Oh, darling.
Look, Jenny, you marry Cortland. He loves you, and he's a fine man.
You can't mean all this.
I do, Jenny. And if you're wondering how I can support you, there's an oil stock, Comanche Oil. Tell him to buy it all he can. It'll make you both rich for life. See, somebody once wrote a poem. Something about each man killing the thing he loves. He might have been writing about me. I knew that to save my sanity, I had to go. So I took the first train out. It happened to be westbound. It wasn't just Jenny I had to leave. It was everybody. I had become a sort of a zombie, a dead man walking, and I was the only one in the world who knew it. So there was a gold mining camp where I lived for 5 years.
Well, what happened to Jenny, Jean's mother?
She died when I was born.
Yes, I read about it in Variety the week after it happened. Then towards the end of the fifth year, I picked up a California newspaper and I read about Harry Cortland, the oil man who had become rich from Comanche oil, the tip I had given your father years before.
Father mentioned that you were responsible.
And then do you remember 3 months ago? The night of your coming out party at the Mayfield Hotel. When I read about your happiness, I was happy. Until I listened to the radio.
Now the 11:55 news brought to you by your Comanche oil reporter. Flying his converted army bomber today, Harry Cortland, multi-millionaire president of Comanche Oil, took off from LaGuardia Field in an attempt to smash the east-west speed record. Mr. Cortland expects to reach Los Angeles by...
No, he must get off the plane. He must get off. He must get off the plane. I must go see his daughter. It was after midnight when I reached your house. I pushed my way past the door, but your fiancé, Elliot, he stopped me.
Oh, wait a minute. Who are you? What do you want?
I must talk to Miss Cortland. I'm an old friend of her father's. I have an urgent message for him.
Well, I'm sorry, but he's not here.
Yes, I know, but I must reach him at once.
Well, I'm afraid that's impossible. He's flying from New York.
Is she flying nonstop?
Why, no. One stop in Wichita for fuel.
Well, then please call, Ellie. Leave a message for him to halt the flight.
Halt the flight? Why, he'd laugh at us. Just a minute. Jean.
Yes, Elliot?
Jean, did you hear?
Yes, I heard.
Please tell him the message comes from John Triton.
John Triton?
Yeah.
But Dad told me that John Triton was dead.
No, he's not dead. Please call him.
Why should Mr. Cortland stop the flight?
Because if he doesn't, the plane will crash.
And just how do you know that?
Does it matter? Is it too late to reach him?
No, I suppose not, but...
Well, then, please call.
What do you think, Elliot?
I think it's a lot of nonsense.
Well, what can you lose except $3 on a phone bill?
Well, all right. Hello, operator. Get me the municipal airport of Wichita, Kansas, please.
Mr. Triton, do you make it a practice to go around predicting airplane crashes?
No, I don't.
Maybe just the planes of very rich men?
No, not even those.
Well, then what is it? A bet that he won't break the record?
Hello, the night manager, please. Hello? This is Harry Cortland's daughter. I'd like a message delivered to my father when he lands. Oh, he has? No, that's all right. Goodbye. He's already taken off.
Well, good. That means he's got the record.
Yes, I hope so. I went home and buried myself in my room and then in the morning, the news came over the radio.
And now we bring you a special message. The wreckage of the Comanche Angel, the plane in which Harry Cortland and his pilot were attempting to smash the east-west record, was discovered early today by forest rangers at Gallup, New Mexico. Both occupants of the plane are dead.
One week later, there was a knock on my door. Oh, Miss Cortland.
Mr. Triton, we found out where you live. I had to come to see you.
I'm sorry, Miss Cortland, about your father. He was the best friend I ever had.
How did you know about my father?
I had an impression. I had a forewarning about 3 months ago.
If you knew this 3 months ago, why did you wait?
Why? Because I didn't believe it myself. But then when the time came, I became frightened, so I went to you. And last night, I had another vision.
Another vision?
Yes, I can see it again now as I look into your eyes.
Tell me, what do you see?
You are going to die.
Die? How soon?
Quite soon.
6 months? 1 month?
Sooner than that.
How soon? And where?
Within a few days. Before the end of the week.
When?
At night. Under the stars.
The Philip Morris Playhouse on Broadway, presenting The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, starring Peter Lorre.
Well, I went to see the police after that, the district attorney especially. I told him the whole story about Triton and my fiancée and his prediction of her death and her attempted suicide. In the meantime, Triton had evidently convinced Jean she needed his protection. They were going to defy fate together, so she invited him to her home. Only they weren't alone. Several business partners of her father's were there, too.
Come in, Mr. Triton.
Thank you, Jean.
These gentlemen were with Dad in the East, completing an oil merger before he died. This is Mr. Gilman, president of Mid-Tide Oil.
How do you do, Mr. Triton?
How do you do?
This is Mr. Myers, attorney for the estate.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
And Peter Vincent, Dad's secretary.
Oh, I know.
They've been going over Dad's papers. Some of the merger details were lost.
And the estate needs settling, too.
You'll forgive me, gentlemen, but has Jean told you about some of my terrible predictions?
We've heard something about it. It's very disturbing, indeed.
No one seems to believe in you, Mr. Triton, but I believe in you. I know you're going to help me.
You see, somehow my fate seems inevitably bound up in Jean's.
It's very interesting. What precisely are you afraid of, Mr. Triton?
Last night, I saw a vision. First, a series of cloudy flashes, and then I heard a voice saying to Jean, "There's no danger now." And then I saw her again, lying on the stars. And then I heard a shot.
Sounds ridiculous.
Yes, I know. I even saw something about myself.
What?
Oh, it's not important.
Did you see when the moment was?
Yes. Tomorrow night, as the clock strikes 11.
Come on in, Lieutenant.
All right, sir.
The police are here, Jean.
The police?
Yes, I was just down at the district attorney's office. I told them the whole story.
Elliot.
This is Lieutenant Sean.
How do you do, Miss Cortland? Which one of you is Triton?
I'm John Triton.
You're under arrest, Mr. Triton.
Arrest for what?
I don't understand.
We've been talking with the police in New Mexico. The plane your father was in was wrecked in the mountains, but it did not hit a peak. It fell.
Fell?
Yes, ma'am. Through a propeller.
That's not impossible.
No, not if somebody worked on the shaft with a file, which, according to the investigations, is exactly what happened.
Then my father was murdered.
Precisely, Mrs. Cortland. It's pretty easy to predict a murder, especially when you set the forces in motion yourself by sabotaging a plane. Come along, Mr. Triton.
Look, you're making a serious mistake, Lieutenant. My fate is linked to Miss Cortland's. I'm the only one. I'm the only one who might save her tomorrow night at 11.
Your fate is linked to a pair of handcuffs. You're going downtown. In there, Triton.
Yes, sir. Look, Lieutenant, I'm completely innocent of the murder of Mr. Cortland. He was my best friend. Why should I want to kill him?
He was a very rich man. If you could pull some of this phony hocus-pocus on his daughter, claim the scene of the future, you could pull off a nice series of blackmail stunts in this town. Quite a bunco game.
Look, Lieutenant, I desperately need your help. Miss Cortland's life hangs in the balance. If I'm allowed to go to her house to be near her, there's a possibility that I might use this power of mine to save her.
And if you go back to the house and the girl lives, as she will, you can claim that you were responsible and ask for a fat reward.
No, I'll ask for no reward, sir. In the first place, I haven't long to live.
You mean you're predicting your own death, Triton?
Very soon.
Quite an act.
An act, huh? Look, Lieutenant, you have on your desk some papers which I've never seen in my life.
Yeah, well?
They relate to a man convicted of murder, a man named Amos Block.
Oh, you could have looked over my shoulder.
I've been facing front ever since I came into your office. But I'll go on. Amos Block is to be moved to St. Quentin tomorrow, huh? He'll never make the trip. I see him in his cell, a suicide.
Well, that's one I can check. Quinn, now this is Sean. How's Block getting along? What? When? I'll be darned. All right. Bye.
Well, What happened to him, Lieutenant?
Amos Block just killed himself in his cell.
Well, Lieutenant, you can't say he arranged that.
You know, my grandmother used to tell me stories about leprechauns and banshees. I used to think she was kidding, but now I'm beginning to wonder.
Will you let me go now?
Under armed guard, yes. We'll release you temporarily. Take him back to Miss Cortland's house, boys.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
So they brought Crichton back to the house. But before he got there, we had looked at a clock in the hallway. It was 11:05, so the danger seemed over. Evidently, Crichton's prediction this time had missed. Jean was grateful. The suspense appeared to be over. She walked into the garden alone. There, she looked up toward the stars. Then a man came toward her out of the shadows. It was Gilman, the president of the Mid-Tide Oil Company, her father's associate.
Oh, Mr. Gilman.
Hello, Jean. Looks like your troubles are all over. That man Triton was a hoax.
But the clock inside, I hear it now.
The clock is wrong. It's after 11.
What are you doing?
Don't be frightened. There's no danger now.
The voice saying...
Saying what?
There's no danger now. He must have met you.
That's right, Jean. You're going to die.
No.
I'm going to strangle you.
No.
At that moment, in front of the house, I was opening the door to let the lieutenant and Triton in.
We decided to let him come back here.
Where's Miss Cortland?
Oh, she's outside, but it's all over now. It's after 11.
Must have moved to your clock. It's just 11 o'clock now.
What? Hey, where are you going?
I'm going into the garden. She's in danger. After man, come back here, you!
Tyson had rushed at breakneck speed toward the garden. The police in hot pursuit. He'd picked up a chair, evidently in an effort to save Jean's life. He was attempting to beat Gilman over the head, but the shot fired from one of the policeman's revolvers pierced his heart. And he fell dead on the ground. We rushed over.
We took care of him, Miss Cortland.
But it wasn't Triton. It was this man here, Gilman, who was trying to kill me.
That's ridiculous. She's out of her mind.
It was you, Mr. Gilman.
Now I know. There was a merger on before Mr. Cortland died. Gilman didn't want the options found.
What do you mean?
He didn't want the merger to go through. The options were due to expire the day after tomorrow, provided Miss Cortland didn't find them first.
Well, go on.
Well, he tried to make sure that she didn't. In that case, he could keep the option money and still retain control of the vast Mid-Tide oil interests.
So it was you, Mr. Gilman, who tampered with Mr. Cortland's plane. And he and Triton were in cahoots.
Oh, I think you're wrong, Lieutenant Shawn. I think Triton gave his life to save Jean.
Oh, the whole thing was an act. Otherwise, Miss Cortland would be dead like he predicted.
But he thought she was. His visions all came true. The time. The stars. Only, you see, they ended with his death. He couldn't see past that. He couldn't know that she was still alive.
This letter fell out of his pocket. It's for you, Elliot.
Dear Elliot, as you read this, I will be lying at your feet, killed by...
To revolver for policeman. No one is to blame. My death was as certain as all the other events. Some of you who have just seen me die will doubt me. Or you may call this a series of weird coincidences. But I know that you, Elliot, and some of the others will not dismiss everything so easily. My own strange fate must make you ponder for a moment. Must make you realize that there are things on Earth still hidden from us. Secret things. Dark and mysterious, beyond the power and knowledge of mortal man.
Thank you, Peter Lorre, Everett Sloan, Jewel Lane, Ed Begley, and Mandel Kramer.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can always find more from Results Incorporated, Philip Morris Playhouse, past episodes of this show and thousands of others at the website relicradio.com. You can find our Shoutcast stream there as well, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. It's how these shows are made possible and coming to you every week. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.